Our conversation shifts now to a discussion of domestic workers in the U.S. and how unprotected most of them are from the most basic fairness and safety regulations on the job. We begin, though, with a real worst-case scenario.
Lucy was working 7 days a week, on call 24 hours a day, 16 to 20 hours a day, and was not even permitted to go to sleep.
That's attorney Sheena Wadawan. Her client, 23-year-old Lucia Mwaka, came to Rockville, Maryland from Kenya to be a domestic worker for the Kenyan embassy's head of public affairs. She ended up in a state of virtual slavery and in a potential legal no-man's land of diplomatic immunity. Armando Trull is the senior reporter from WAMU right here in Washington, D.C., who broke this story of alleged abuse, joins me now. Armando, welcome to The Takeaway.
Good to be here.
This is an issue for Washington, D.C., because so many diplomats are here, but it really speaks volumes about legal protections for all kinds of domestic workers. How did you discover this story?
Well, I was approached by the organization that would ultimately rescue Lucy back in March. And that organization was listed in a booklet that Lucy had gotten outlining some of the rights that she had or could exercise.
So the State Department gives you a handbook saying, if something bad happens to you, here are your rights. But once you get inside the doors of the embassy residence or the diplomat's home, it's a different story.
Exactly. And in fact, Lucy had mentioned to me how she would read at night this booklet and how she would compare what the rights in the booklet were to her very different parallel universe.
And meanwhile, drowning out the words on the page from the U.S. government were the kinds of fear that was being instilled into her by her clients there in the Kenyan embassy. Listen.
Threats of what's going to happen to your family, you are going to get deported, you are going to be homeless.
You know what a slave is, right?
Yeah, that was me. That was me.
She sounds empowered there, but when you spoke with her, I mean, she's really had a journey from terror to freedom.
Exactly. She alleges that during the entire time, four years that she was kept in these conditions, that she was not allowed any freedom of mobility. Her passport was taken away. You heard the threats that she alleges were used to keep her kind of in this condition of indentured servitude, so to speak. And then all of the promises that she was made back in Nairobi to lure her here. Promises of $9 an hour, vacation time, medical care for an accident that she had suffered back in Nairobi. And she told me that she had to remove stitches from her mouth herself because she never got any of these promises. They were never kept.
How seriously does the State Department take this problem, and how able are they to peer into these kind of diplomatic immunity bubbles?
Well, you know, it's hard to say because on paper, there are a whole series of legal rights that these domestic workers have. But when they go to these briefings, sometimes they're accompanied by minders from the embassy who say, well, don't pay attention to what you're hearing. That's not really the way things are. They would be told, don't speak to anybody. And so it's kind of a method of controlling these folks. Now, the State Department says it has procedures in place. In fact, sometimes the State Department is able to sanction specific diplomats and not allow them to bring other domestic workers.
But they can't be deported or prosecuted,
no,
right?
No, of course not. And so it almost becomes a public affairs battle where the people, like, for example, the human rights organization that is helping Lucy is trying to get $200,000 in back pay for all of the overtime that she worked that was never paid for. But ultimately, it's just a matter of whether the embassy bows to this pressure because they can claim diplomatic immunity.
You know, great reporting here, but I'll tell you, the most heartbreaking piece of this is the lesson that Lucy had to learn here in the United States about what freedom means. Listen.
It's better to sleep under a bridge than to sleep in a mansion where you are always feeling like you can't breathe. I feel great.
Wow.
Wow, indeed.
She told that to you.
Sure.
And there are many, many others like her.
I think she told it to herself first.
Wow. Armando Trull, senior reporter from WAMU, who broke this story of alleged abuse and is continuing to tell the rest of the story. It's a legal battle that continues. Armando, thanks so much.
Pleasure to be here, John. Thank you.
Everyone would agree that housework is work. But the people who do it for a living aren't necessarily considered part of the traditional labor force. It's one of those maddening realities that keeps millions of Americans in poverty or unprotected from unsafe working conditions and ineligible for quality health care. In 1938, domestic workers, nannies, caregivers, housekeepers were excluded from federal fair employment standards. The law was amended in the 70s to give them minimum wage coverage and overtime protection, but full parity has eluded the legions of domestic workers. The labor laws of 29 states specifically exclude home care workers from their own state minimum wage laws. Sarah Lieberstein is staff attorney for the National Employment Law Project and joins me now. Sarah, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thank you.
How would you describe the impact of this lack of parity between domestic workers, and we're talking about a variety of categories here, and the rest of the labor force in the United States?
It's been devastating. These workers are very lowly paid, and not only are their hourly wages so low, but they frequently aren't paid for the work that they do perform. So often employers won't pay workers for time they spend working before or after their official shift. In the case of home care workers, a lot of workers are missing out on pay when they travel from one client's home to the other, or when they're working long overnight shifts and they have to get up in the middle of the night to care for a client. They often are not paid for that time.
And they can't really take this anywhere. It's not as though they can, you know, issue an ultimatum to their employer without fear of losing their job. And while there are, in theory, places where they can take charges of abusive conditions, most workers don't choose to take that route.
That's right. Domestic workers and home care workers are often in a tricky situation because they have a very intimate relationship with the people they care for the families whose homes they take care of. And so they may feel a lot of pressure not to complain and not to damage that relationship. On the other hand, there has been some movement for domestic workers and home care workers to organize, and home care workers increasingly are organizing into unions.
And one would think that the beneficiaries of a better workforce, a happier workforce, would be the people who need home care workers, that if they didn't buy into this exclusion mentality, mm-hmm. that actually things would be better for everyone.
That's absolutely right. The more that we invest in the home care system, the more that we're going to see an increase in the level of care and also the stability of the workforce. These workers experience turnover and burnout at extremely high rates. So the person you might rely on to help get your grandmother out of bed in the morning might be someone who's brand new on the job or someone who's completely stressed out or even someone who's had an injury but can't afford to take time off to get better. And we're expected to add about 1 million new jobs to the workforce in the next decade. If we don't have good qualified workers who are paid a decent wage, this workforce is really going to suffer in the care along with it.
And given the human costs here, a certification program and an attempt to make sure that people are properly trained would make a lot of sense. Have there been efforts to do this, and where have they gone in legislatures around the country and at the federal level even?
You know, there has been some movement. New York State, actually, where I am, is making some inroads into thinking about how to create a real job ladder for the workers and give them opportunities to both increase training and increase pay. But I'd say at a basic level, this work is skilled. No matter how much training the workers get, they are performing so many different tasks. They have to be able to relate well to the people they care for. They often have to take on paramedical tasks. So I think the real emphasis has to be on improving the wages, improving the conditions and the benefits, and then we can ensure that the qualified workers are staying in the job and continuing to build their expertise over time.
There's a special category that actually relates to the expected rise in the number of elderly and infirm individuals who are going to require pretty much 24-hour care, either because of Alzheimer's, dementia, or in the case of veterans, people who have very serious injuries and who need in-home care. But that category of workers is almost completely unprotected. Describe.
Well, even after a new federal rules reform takes place at the beginning of next year, live-in domestic workers, including live-in home care workers, will continue to be exempt from overtime pay. So although the workers will gain some level of protection, if they're employed solely by that private household, they remain shut out of certain overtime protections unless the state they live in offers those.
And if a family member is performing that service, there is absolutely no tax benefit or any sort of reimbursement or any credit that can be given for that essential work being done.
That's right. A lot of care work goes completely unpaid because it's a family member performing it. Some states do pay family caregivers through their Medicaid programs, but it's true that family members are performing a lot of work and it's either completely unpaid or very underpaid.
Can organization address this in the sense that a strike-like event could have such an impact that people would really begin to think about this differently? Or is it going to take something along the lines of a worker's bill of rights that would have to go state by state to really change the way people view domestic workers here?
Well, the biggest reform is about to happen, and that's the extension of federal minimum wage and overtime protections to this workforce starting on January 1st. That is such a huge and critical step forward. It's making sure that workers get the very most basic of labor protections. And it's also sending a message that this industry is a formal industry. These jobs are real jobs and that employers need to follow the law. States can also increase their protections, and that can go a long way, especially because some states have a higher minimum wage.
Sarah Lieberstein is a staff attorney at the National Employment Law Project. Thanks so much, Sarah.
Thank you.
So America employs millions of domestic home care workers, as we've been discussing. Have you ever been one of them? Have you ever hired one?
Hey, John. It's Erin from Pompton Lakes. Yes, I did employ a domestic home care worker. She was from Ireland, and it was a wonderful woman, and she took great care of my children. In fact, I wish I could still talk to her today because we had many enjoyable conversations, and my kids adored her.
Well, that's a storybook story there. We'd love to hear yours. You can call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE. From New York, I was a nanny for a stay-at-home mom. It was simultaneously intimate and demoralizing. Never again. And from Kirkland, Washington, in the early 1980s, I was a nanny for a family with a baby and a preschool boy. Both parents had demanding jobs and were often much later than expected. I learned a few years later when my Social Security report of earnings arrived that although they had been withholding FICA from the $3.25 an hour they were paying me, they never submitted my portion nor added their employer contribution. Ouch. Call us at 877-8-MY-TAKE or find us at thetakeaway.org.